My name is Michelle Blacksmith, and I'm conducting an oral history for the Bridgeport Cultural Arts Center project. Interviewee, will you please state your name and age?
Teddy Daniel Gardner, age 53.
Your address, please.
1494 Capitol Avenue, Bridgeport, Connecticut.
What is today's date?
July 14th, 2016.
And where is this interview taking place?
The Bridgeport Public Library in downtown Bridgeport.
So, Teddy or Dan, which do you prefer?
I prefer Dan.
Dan, how did you hear about the Art Center?
It was actually the building that the Art Center... No, let me digress. Actually, it was part of a school field trip. It was located downtown Bridgeport on Main Street, across the street, I think, from Kay's. That was back in the early 70s. And we had gone down there for a day trip, and we were introduced to people in the Art Center there.
Okay. And what did you do at the Art Center?
Crafts. It was like an art program. There were crafts. There were some other things that they did. I really wasn't aware it was happening, but I was learning things that I hadn't actually known before. Some things about history and about my culture that were there, and I learned it there.
Now, you mentioned that it was a school field trip. What school?
Longfellow.
Longfellow, okay. So, do you happen to know how many years Longfellow did school trips with the Art Center?
I'm not positive, but I had attended Longfellow from kindergarten through the seventh grade, and that was the first time that I had gone to the Art Center, and that was the middle 70s.
Okay. And you talked about things that you learned about arts and crafts and also your culture. Would you please elaborate?
I was wondering, because they were dressed differently than a lot of people I had seen. The clothing that some of the teachers were wearing were very different. They were, I guess now they would call them prints or something like that. They were a lot of natural stuff, like they were homemade.
Okay. And when you think about the Art Center, what are some of your memories of the downtown location? You mentioned the studio that was on Main Street.
Oh, that one! That one was cramped. That was a cramped location, and we had to go upstairs to get to it. We took a bus down. We had to park around the back of the building. The bus put us off in the back of the building. I guess that would be Middle Street, I think. We had to walk around to the front and up some stairs into a very, very small area.
And did you attend the Art Center when it moved to the Gary Crooks Memorial Center?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about that.
That was really interesting, because I had to look out the back window of our apartment building, and the building that it was housed in was only 30 feet away. So it was right there in my backyard.
So do you remember any history of the Gary Crooks Center and how the Gary Crooks Center came about?
The Gary Crooks Center, I remember, you're taking me back a long ways. Gary Crooks, we were friends. I remember when the building was built, and I don't think it was ever occupied. The only time it was occupied was when the Cultural Arts Center had moved in. And I think around the same time it was named, I'm not sure if it was named Gary Crooks when it was opened or shortly after. And Gary Crooks was a childhood friend of mine that died maybe 500 feet away from that building in the sewer treatment plant back in 1969.
Who do you remember at the Art Center?
Oh, I remember everybody. Rich, Ralph, Ben, Aaron, Bill, Julius.
So they were all instructors?
They were instructors, yes.
Mm-hmm. And what students do you remember, or friends do you remember going to the Art Center?
Oh, there were a plethora. All my childhood friends went to the Art Center. The ones I was close to were closely attached to the Art Center. And some are still, close friends today.
Now, the Gary Crooks Center, and therefore the Art Center at that time, was located in the P.T. Barnum housing projects. So, what do you think the impact of the Gary Crooks Center was on PT?
The access. It was really accessible to the people that lived in the area, to the kids that lived, because you didn't need transportation. You just walk a few hundred feet maybe some, maybe 1,000 feet, the ones who lived on the far side of the housing project. But you were there, and it was open.
And was there a lot of activity?
Yes, most days there was a lot of activity because it was something to do. Even during, not only during the summertime, but during the winter months also, it was someplace to go. It was a release for a lot of kids to go and learning people and meeting people. You would meet different people there, and you would get to do things that were interesting with the artwork you were being taught. And it wasn't just finger painting or color paints. It was, you know, there was some, you had the ability, you had the access to put something on canvas if you wanted to. They were actually stretching canvas on frames and giving you the paints to express and do whatever you felt you wanted to do.
What were some of your favorite art expressions, things that you liked to do there? I know some people, there was photography, there was music, there was painting. What were some of the things that you enjoyed doing?
Photography and pottery. But photography was probably the biggest draw for me. It was the most interesting, and I enjoyed doing it. And I learned an extreme amount from Rich and some Ben, Bill. So we would go out on excursions from time to time on the weekends. He'd get a bunch of us together, and we'd get in the car, and we'd go places like Beardsley Park, and we'd take pictures of nature, something that you would never see. A kid from PT going out taking pictures of butterflies and taking pictures of plant life and just the water, just scenery, and the quietness of, you know, quietness of the morning.
Now, as an adult, do you photograph today?
Or yes.
Or do you do any other kind of, of artistic expression?
Photograph is probably the biggest thing that I do with any, I wouldn't call it artistic expression, but it's something that I enjoy doing.
Now, what impact did the Arts Center have on you?
I would say it had a large impact, because I'm thinking now, when I think in retrospect about my life growing up in PT, even though, you know, I had a large family with mother and father there, I had a lot of spare time. I had a lot of spare time when school was out during the summertime, and it was someplace to go, it was something to do, and enjoying doing it and being intrigued by, you know, what I was doing and not getting involved in so many other things that were, it, you know, kids were doing that didn't have an outlet or use what was there.
And what impact do you think the Arts Center had on the community?
Everybody knew it was there. They knew the people that worked there. They knew they were working with their children. It was definitely welcoming. It was definitely welcoming to all people. And one strange thing, people thought it was strange to see Richard Staymates or Bill Collins, these are, you know, Caucasian men, going into a housing project and working in a housing project with predominantly black and Hispanic people, and being welcomed. And they were welcomed. It was strange for people from the outside to look in and see. But the truth is, there were really no differences. People were people, and if you were doing something to help me, and you could, and it was seen that, you know, they were there for a positive and a good reason, they were welcome.
Do you know why the Art Center closed, and do you remember it closing?
I remember some things about funding, hearing things about funding going on, lack of funding, funds being cut off. And it definitely wasn't about interest or the need. The need was there, and the need was being met because you had people that were participating in all the things that were being offered there. And I think that was probably funding would be what I would, you know, say was the thing that closed it.
Mm. How would Bridgeport benefit from a reopening or recreation of the Arts Center today?
In Art Center, I think that a lot of things would have to be different. They would be different, even though some of the artistic, being able to express yourself in an artistic way, they would still be there. But art has changed in a way, and I don't know if society has kept up or being taught. Our kids are being taught the importance of art and the importance of that type of expression, I think it would be different. I don't know. I'd probably have to get my head together with a few other people and, you know, discuss it and, you know, find out more what kids are doing now, because I know what my kids are doing and what they like. I don't know if it would have to do, I don't know if it would deal with painting and sculptures, photography, yes it would, some other things it would. Music, definitely it would, on that aspect. Music would definitely be a part of artistic expression that a lot of our kids, it's an outlet for them. But they may, if they learned, if they were able to, they learned a lot more about their history. And when I say our kids, I guess we're talking about Bridgeport, we're talking about PT, I'm talking about African American and Hispanic or Latino population, learning more about their own culture, a culture that I know now was stolen. And it was, it's a horrible thing, because some of the things I believe that we're dealing with today is because there's a lack of identity, being able to identify with something that's positive. All the things that they get now are not positive. They're actually negative. The inference or the feeling that I think they're being sent is that you're not really important, because there's nothing, history in this country started its slavery. There's nothing spoken about the rich history of Africa prior to that first slave ship leaving the shores of West Africa. And I believe it has sorely hurt our culture, because there's a hole there, and there's a need to have that hole filled. And at this point, there's an attempt to fill it with a culture, customs that are foreign to even, you know, the rhythm that's in our bones. And that is difficult. It's difficult to teach somebody Mozart when you have drums beating, and your drums beating with the rhythm of your heart, and it doesn't make sense. And there's something being lost. And some people see it. A lot more people are seeing and understanding it, but the vast population, they're not seeing it.
So I'd like to go back a little bit. On this conversation of culture, identity, and richness of culture, and the importance of filling a void. You mentioned that the Art Center, you learned some things about your culture. Do you remember what kinds of things were taught, or how they were taught in terms of culture or history?
History, music. Was one of the big pieces I think I learned. I learned a lot about the drums and what the drums were used for in our culture in Africa. And it meant something, because it made sense. It made total sense to be able to communicate with a drum beat telling somebody to come home for dinner. It was time to do something. And it was an interesting form of communication to me, and to actually see, I think it was Ralph and somebody else, they did an exhibition just within that one room of, they were talking to each other, and one was telling the other a story with the rhythm of the drums. And I don't remember exactly what the story was, but they got it. And I said, wow, how can they do that? They're talking with drums.
So when you think about the Art Center, and not just art, but, you know, visual arts, but music, you know, there, as you say, there was culture, history taught. Do we have a need for a center like that today?
Yes. Unequivocally, yes. Because the public schools, they aren't teaching a lot of the things that need to be taught. When you miss a teaching opportunity, sometimes it's gone for such a long period of time, and it's not learned until a person is put in a position that they have to learn. Difficult position, and their eyes are opened and realize that, you know, they were done wrong, that something was left out, and then to find out that it was left out on purpose, it creates animosity. And I think a lot of the animosity between black and white in this country today is because blacks are realizing that something was not lost, it was stolen, it was taken away, and not being given the opportunity to regain it, to continue to tell all those stories from a Eurocentric viewpoint, which doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense at all. I mean, it's so broken up. You hear these great stories about ancient history, about the pyramids, about the sphinxes, and then you hear all of a sudden, I mean, it stops right there. Then the next, and this is North Africa. Then the next thing you hear about Africa is about slavery. There's nothing about culture. There's nothing at all about the people that lived there during those times. There's a big hole in the middle, and the hole that's in the middle is, I mean, you can't hide the pyramids. I mean, but there's other things you can't. There are other things that are smaller that can be hidden, and they have been hidden. Not taught, and taught from a Eurocentric viewpoint, because I can imagine me being in those same places with those writers of history and seeing it through my eyes and my perspective and writing the same story. The story would be written very, very differently. Even the stuff that they're taught now, the story about Christopher Columbus, the things that are taught from a Eurocentric viewpoint, if I was writing that story that I'm going to tell my children, the story would include not the lie that it was all good and it was a wonderful thing. It was a wonderful thing for Europeans. It was hell for Africans. And that is, you know, that's the truth.
And you alluded to earlier that the times in which we live, and certainly we are having this interview on July 14th, 2016, so the recent events have been the murders of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile, the deaths of Dallas police officers, not to be conflated with those two murders, but happening at the same time, and the visibility and vocal ability of the Black Lives Matter movement and other movements coming to the fore. And so, considering all that's happening now, do you see the absence of culture and art that's specific to African and Latino American populations? Is the absence of that related at all in your mind to the civil unrest and the uprising that's happening now?
Yes, we have to look at this thing from a historic perspective, starting from the day that the first ship landed here and what the people were forced to do. And moving through that period of time when people were subjugated, they were sold, they were beaten, they were mistreated, to more modern times when some of the more severe stuff had stopped, but the subjugation, the discrimination still continued, and there was no reason for it. There were stories that were told because the people that perpetrating these things, it seems like they assume that that what some people believe is true, that we are stupid, we are not intelligent, we can't put one and one together and get two. But the truth is, we can think, we do see, we do hear, and we feel very deeply. And with that being said, it's only natural that a human being would feel this way. If these things were done to a white person, they would feel that way too. And you have to look at it. You have to use. You have to look at it in a way that the empathy part. You have to feel and understand that you know we are human too. You cut me, I bleed. If you yell at me, you're gonna hurt my feelings maybe. But it's to the point where when you've been yelled at, you've been mistreated to a point, the pain is so intense, there's nothing but pain. So anything different would be a strain. So it's easy, you know, you're gonna put me in jail anyway, so why shouldn't I bust you upside the head or do harm to you? You're doing it to me, why shouldn't I fight back? And in some ways, I think that's where a lot of our people are now, because the pain is so real, it's there, there's no way to get away from it. And the only way, it's, what do they call it, fight or flight. And you can't run, you can't go anyplace. You're stuck in this socioeconomic position. The only thing you can do is act out and to fight. There are no tools to move, remove yourself from the place that you are. What they teach in psychology about fight or flight, yeah, I'm being threatened, so I can't go anyplace, I'm gonna fight. And that's what's happening. It's a natural human reaction to react angrily at somebody else, especially when you know you don't know love, you don't know the power of a human touch of someone that actually cares about you. And so many of our people have been conditioned to act that way just to survive. You got to be hard to survive. I can remember a story my uncle told me. He grew up and he was born in Florida, and they were neighbors to a white family. Florida, 1920s, 1930s. It was just as bad as Mississippi, Georgia, Alabama. And his father beat him because he was playing with this little white girl, and it was something that he could not do. And I thought that was so crazy. And you grow up. And it doesn't stop at childhood. It continues on into adolescence. It continues into young adulthood. It continues into middle age, and even in old age, these things are still there.
So, is there anything that you would like to say about the Art Center that hasn't already been asked?
No, I would have to repeat, it's just the connection, the education, the camaraderie, the fellowship, all these things that humans need. Some people think that all you need is, you know, food and shelter, but that is a fallacy. You need more than food and shelter. You need nurturing, you need education, you need hope. And without those things, we end up in places like we are now in some of our communities, and those places where large numbers of people of African descent, black people, African Americans, whatever some people you want to call yourself or not call yourself, we're there, and there's no way out. There's no way out, and it seems that if the laws, politics of this country, is hell bent on keeping those people in those places, because when you think of even white people getting screwed up, they can't figure out the fact that 1% of the wealth of this country is tied up. That 99% of the wealth of this country is tied up in 1% of its population, which is twisted. I mean, they've even bamboozled their own people into being sharecroppers, into working for them. And just because they own the land, they don't. Well, let me take that back. They don't own the land. The land that was stolen. And just because of that fact, that they have the right to misuse, to victimize, take more than their fair share of what really doesn't even belong to them. And until something is done with that mindset, that just because you own something, that you should get that much of the profit, is morally wrong. And even the ones that call themselves Christians, I mean, you just can't understand what Jesus Christ was talking about if all you do is go to church on Sunday and hear a sermon or a story for 20 minutes. You have to open up the book and study and realize it and connect the things that are being said by someone that you say that you serve and he's your savior are true, and connect them with, you know, other books. I mean, the Bible is not the only book that we live by on earth. It's a guidebook that it connects us to a faith that we feel strongly in, but other things happen in society, in the world, that were happening at the same times. What was happening in the world, and you connected with what was happening in the Bible, and why this man named Jesus came and said the things he did and did the things he did, is exactly what's happening now in so many ways. You know, it's thousands of years later, but people are still doing the same things and expecting other people just to be tolerant of it and want them to, you know, to obey and just follow their lead. And it doesn't work because people have feelings and people are thinking and they see the wrong. And when you see someone doing wrong and you can't do anything about it, it's a horrible feeling. It's a horrible feeling. Or to see somebody suffer and not being able to help them is a horrible feeling. And it's natural for people to act out, act up, and even hurt other people if they don't mean to, but they know no other way. And if you've never, like I said earlier, felt the human touch, felt the soul of another human being, and not in an erotic way, in an agape type way, your fellow man, and knowing that someone else cares about you, if you never felt that, you don't know what the heck it is. It's foreign. I mean, how could somebody come up to me and treat me that way? Nobody's ever done that. I'm a grown man. And to feel somebody, it doesn't look like me, is subjugated and hurt me all of my life to act like they like me now? Am I supposed to believe that? I don't believe that. And they're not, they don't believe it. It's going to take time. I heard it said time and time again. It's not something that's going to happen overnight. It's going to take time. And I don't believe it's going to happen in my lifetime, or maybe not in my children's lifetime. But I do believe that a change is coming, because people are realizing that there's some wrongs that need to be righted. And by hook or by crook, my mother would say, it's going to happen. It's going to happen with their permission and coming along, or they're just going to get drug along with us.
So your final thoughts on the Art Center?
The Art Center was a very, I wouldn't call it pivotal part of my life, but it was extremely important. Maybe I would, an important time in my life, that I was had things to do that wouldn't get me in trouble, because so many things around me were happening. And Art Center wasn't the cure-all for everything. There were other things that some kids were able to get involved in that they enjoyed. But the important part was that it had a dual purpose. It kept me off the streets, and it taught me something that I found that I enjoyed. And with those two together, it was definitely a rudder in the water of my life. It gave me some direction that otherwise wouldn't have been there. I wouldn't have known that I enjoyed photography so much and I could do so much with it. And with a lot of things, even, you know, working with my hands, that I could do things on my own that I probably never would have known unless this opportunity was afforded to me. And it just happened to be there, just like a lot of things that other people get involved in. It may not, in the long run, it may not make them $1 million, but it'll keep them out of jail. And that says a lot.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.